noises. Welcome to Super Garbage Day, a retro video game review show where my co-host and I play a game 20 years or older that you, the listener, chooses. Every episode, we randomly pick a game submitted by the community to play, kindly dissect, then discuss. Welcome to episode 57. I am your host, Prince Ross Lee, whatever. And also with me is
Vamfernal Ababwa.
Perfect. So let's talk about a little super garbage news. What you got for me?
So in the big news of the week, and our main story is the discontinuation of the online services for the 3DS and Wii U software. As of 5 p.m. Pacific on April 8th, 2024, online play and other functionality that uses online communication was discontinued for the Nintendo 3DS and Wii U software, including software exclusive to the new Nintendo 3DS. This also includes online cooperative play, internet rankings, and data distribution. With some exceptions, online services have ended for all Nintendo 3DS and Wii U software.
So they're just all doing this. All the companies are like really slowly killing off the old guard, right? Is that what's happening here?
Pretty much. The thing is, with this kind of news, it's not unexpected, but there's a big movement right now pushing towards leaving games at a playable state. Even if you don't have the online servers going on, just patch things so that at least people have the multiplayer functionality and that kind of thing. Another addendum to this story. So there's this software called Pretendo right now. And Pretendo are... it's an open source project that aims to recreate Nintendo network for the 3DS and Wii U using clean room reverse engineering. That means continued access to online features for Nintendo hardware that is planned to exist long after the inevitable closure of the Nintendo network. So these people are basically on their own. They are continuing these online features. So, which is actually for game preservation and all that, I think it is great. I do have one big concern about Pretendo, and it's that, you know, they're doing God's work out here, but they do have a donate button on their website.
Okay, well, Nintendo's going to be right up their butts.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I don't think it will gather much attention, but the fact that... you know, I believe that if you want to donate to someone doing a service like this, that's great. But Nintendo is someone that if they even like take a whiff that you're making money out of anything related to them, they're going to slap you with a cease and desist like quicker than.
Oh, dude, they got Tom Cruise level of lawyers for any, in this case, for any bit of emulation or their IPs being used. I mean, they are literally the epitome of do not mess with us in any sense of legalities. And I mean, they just took down Dolphin. So this is not, I don't think this is going to last very long.
Yes. Hopefully all of this is, to my understanding, completely original code, which is part of what Dolphin was using. They were using an exploit, which came from actual Nintendo code, which was part of the legal defense they use. This is all original, so I don't know what grounds Nintendo will have to sue if they choose that route, but it's Nintendo and their lawyers. Just the lawsuit is enough to make someone just stop doing it.
Well, they don't mess around. Yeah, if they send you something, you better be ready to pay up or change whatever you're doing.
Yeah, these people don't have the resources to fight Nintendo at court. So even if...
that's a bummer, man. These are the people's champions at the end of the day. Yes, they need a donate button and all that, which is not a good idea. However, I mean, what are you supposed to do? We're us, the old guard ourselves, we want preservation. And it seems like the only way to have that anymore is to buy the physical copies of the older stuff. And that's why I always champion that. There's always this debate about against digital versus physical. And I don't even think it's a fair debate, because yes, digital is the current time and the future. However, physical is you own it. It's yours. And we're all slowly seeing companies, the big wigs, the big money, take away these from the people all the time. And I hate to sound so revolutionary, but I'm just saying, like, this, it's why I like to own the physical. It's not, I don't think it's too far out of the realm of possibility that something in the future harps down really hard on emulation and ROMs, like eradicates it on the internet, allows Windows to use this. I know this is crazy foil head talk, but I just don't think I think it will happen where you can't even have ROM files on your computer, or you'll get like a cease and desist immediately.
Funny thing about that, recently the new head of the Xbox division, she started a division of Xbox that is dedicated to backwards compatibility for all Xbox products. So they want to make basically the whole Xbox library from Xbox One playable in modern systems and going forward, which is actually a great news for game preservation.
I think that's weird. I read that news too, and I thought two things. One, it sounds like a CEO just needed to give like their child a job. And two, how are you going to create this division and lay off thousands of people who work on active games or different departments? Like, I'm like,
well, what? that is a whole other debate. I on paper, it sounds good.
It does. But to me, I'm like, really? Do you really care that much? Are you sure that your product isn't actually just your stocks? You know, like at the end of the day, I think that's a little bit of a PR stunt to kind of win, because they're probably hearing the crowd say, hey, we're kind of sick of the fact that gaming's going towards, you know, a live service and everybody's getting rid of physical media. So they're like, well, what if we create this department for like game preservation? What does that even mean? Well, I want to know what their plans are. What does that mean?
That means you will be able to play Akuji the Heartless.
Finally.
Yes.
Thank God. Oh, well, that is what it is.
All right. So in other news, and this is a funny story. So Final Fantasy 14 finally released on the Xbox on March. And they are having a big issue with Final Fantasy because the Xbox integrated profanity filter is going nuclear on that game. So we're talking that it's censoring pretty much anything that is remotely offensive. And we're talking like very common MMO speech, you know, it's like raids. It says R and censors the rest because it's got AIDS in the word.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think
of
that.
You can't say Game Pass because of the and it's gone like very extreme, and it's funny because they're actually flagging people because the guilds in Final Fantasy are called free companies, and when people are like recruiting people for free companies, it's actually flagging it as prostitution.
This is getting out of control. Meanwhile, we have a game out there that's doing terrible called Suicide Squad. And you're wondering, how is that even being sold with the word suicide in the title? And I understand it's a comic book and all that, but I'm wondering, like, does anybody realize that that might be a big part of like this ultimate filtering, this ultimate censorship that's going down? Like, maybe that's a part of the fact that that game's doing really terrible outside of it being like a, you know, online service only or whatever it's called. So how do you even talk about that game if you can't even say Game Pass? If you can't even say, I understand this is Final Fantasy we're talking about, but I'm saying like there's so many loops that all these companies have created with language that I'm like, how did Suicide Squad even get past that? And I don't understand.
No, and it's funny because the way it's censored, like someone like, oh, cause can anyone help me with a raid? And then it will say, can anyone help me with R star star star? So it actually looks like something offensive. So it's kind of hilarious.
And all the 4chan guys are like, absolutely, we can help you with that. Give us an address.
Yeah, so I thought that was hilarious. And then on the other story I have for you is the potential of Waffle House on Tekken 8. And this is dead serious.
Waffle?
So
what?
You know what Waffle House is? It's a very famous southern diner.
No, I know that. I was just wondering, like, what's the tie-in?
So pretty much, Katsuhiro Harada, the developer of Tekken, like the director, he was asking the players what stages they would love to see in Tekken, like historical sites and that kind of thing. And they kept saying, like, by far the most solicited one was Waffle House, because I don't know if you follow the news, Waffle House is infamous for the brawls that form in there. It's like Chuck E. Cheese.
I did not know that.
No, people are always like throwing chairs at like employees or something. There's always a brawl going on at the Waffle House. So
they should have renamed that Roadhouse movie Waffle House.
Yeah, so the funny thing is he asked on Twitter, okay, what is Waffle House and why do people keep requesting it? And they will show him videos and everything. And it was funny that he says, this is like a quote verbatim from his Twitter. Thanks for the explanation, guys. And I understand that many people are requesting it. However, I think you are missing one important point. The restaurant has both the trademark and the rights to the restaurant. So if the restaurant chain's headquarters refuse to accept my proposal, it will not happen. So he's actually considering putting Waffle House on Tekken.
No, that's dope.
No, and if I was Waffle House, that's some free promotion right there. I will go for it 100%.
They probably have no pulse on even what Tekken is. They've got, you know, a representative of the creation of Tekken reaching out to them, and they're like, what the hell is this? We sell waffles and we have fights every Tuesday. Like,
they'll say, look, we'll throw a wad of money your way and we'll give you free promotion to like millions of people. They'll probably go, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, for reals. That's great. But
that is the news I have for now. And yeah.
Fantastic. So it's like primarily almost all just bad news, but it's also all kind of funny. So that's the thing about life. Life's generally just bad news, but it's pretty funny.
Hey, you gotta embrace these funny stories. Otherwise, it's only bad news.
Yeah, well, gaming is going a bad direction. I know people will try to bring up sales and all this, but I mean, I'm just telling you, it feels like it's dead already. And that's why we have these retro game podcasts, because we're just clinging on to what was fun and what was pure. But I'm going to get off my soapbox and talk about what's new in the land of Super Garbage Day Incorporated. The Super Garbage Bowl signups are happening right now for the patrons. And I know that we have a new Patreon. The other one had so many problems, got deleted. Pretty much on accident. So the new one's here, and I'm noticing that we need more Patreon pool submissions. Please, if you were part of the old one and you were like, if you want to come back, it's only $2 now a month. Otherwise, if you're a part of it, please submit games, because we need to make the list bigger. I'm noticing it's a pretty big list of games we choose from, but I'd like it to be a lot bigger, or, you know, like double up on something that's already been chosen. Also, I just released a new hot sauce video review on YouTube, on the Super Garbage Day YouTube channel, which I did as kind of a fun little 500 sub whatever. It's not doing the best, but I was happy to do it because I love that hot sauce company. So if you know anything about El Yucateco, it's a fantastic, fantastic hot sauce company. And I ordered all of their crazy special edition online only sauces, and I tried them all out. So check that out on the YouTube channel. Other than that, check out occasional streaming, generally on Van Fernal's side at this point, because he is got the best setup and he's the most professional person I know. So look for Van Fernal's retro stream. All these links will be in the show notes. And with all that said, let's talk about the retro question of the week. McKeith asks, what perk do you think has been lost to gaming with every leap in technology? Fern, what do you got?
Perk? I'm kind of struggling with what exactly he means by perk, but I'll answer in the best way I can. I think what was lost the most in gaming is that I believe that since the PS360 generation, every generation now has diminishing returns, and apart from better graphics, there's really not that much different between the games. You play Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare and play a modern one, it clearly looks better, you know. The set pieces might be a little bigger and everything, but overall, it's almost the exact same thing. I think the best thing about the original generations was there was an actual generational leap where you will be excited to see, okay, we got new hardware. Let's see where these companies push it. Like before waiting for a sequel, it's like you can remember exactly that first time you played Mega Man X and saw Mega Man in 16 bits. You know, he teleported in on the stage and started running with all those frames of animation. And you were like, whoa, this is this is the next level. That first time you played Mario 64, we all remember it. Mario went, yahoo, and popped out of that tube. And then you were freely moving around, and it was just like nothing before it.
It was mind-blowing. Mind-blowing.
So I believe that it's just that anticipation that, okay, they're just going to push the envelope and do something that's never been done before. I think the big companies, they figured out gaming now, and it's very profitable, so there's really no need for them to change at this point.
And well, it's innovation now, right? Like they're the whole new thing is like they're trying to innovate, but like we've hit a plateau where the innovation is not really the graphics anymore. It's now maybe AI. I don't even know how they're going to incorporate that, but like what really is the next thing to blow everybody's mind?
No, the thing is,
you can't go from 3D into 4D.
The thing is, you get punished for innovating unless you're like an indie studio nowadays. If you try something, you think outside the box. Look, I love these games that think outside the box. They're not even a success at the moment. Think about it. Demon's Souls was a very niche game, and it didn't have great sales starting out, but word of mouth kept spreading up to the point where they said, hey, FromSoftware said maybe we should make a new game. And that's where Dark Souls happened, and then it literally created a whole genre. Nowadays, if you try something outside the box and you didn't recoup the cost in X amount of time, the company declares it a failure and it gets swept under the rug. So I just think that free reign to try something new, to innovate, that's what's been lost the most in current gaming.
That's a great answer. And also our community chimed in with this on our Discord. If you want to join the Discord, it's absolutely free. A link in the show notes. Please come join us. It's great. Seeky Wisdom said, games that just work. No DLC, no updating the game or updating the console before playing. No having to download before launch and then waiting for it to be unlocked to play. You just pop in the game, you turn on the TV, you push the power button, and you go. That's a great answer.
It's funny because here I am trying to think of something elaborate and Sieg just went with the simplest answer, but it's true.
Well, yeah.
Just expecting the game not to have a game one day one patch right now, it's not even a thing.
We can't accept that. Like, we have accepted it to a point where it's like a meme now where we're like, okay, well, everybody waits, you know, to see if the game's going to be complete a couple months after it's released to play it. You know, that's where I'm at.
And a lot of games, for example, Dragon's Dogma 2 just released.
I know.
It in a rough state, and a lot of people tell me the game's great, but I will wait for a couple months until there's a couple of patches to hop in.
Yeah.
Before
and it's a single player game too. I think this is something that happens with a lot of the single player games.
Yeah, that's crazy. So. Before the game either worked or it didn't, you got it or you didn't. If it's bad, it's
you
could
release a game on a cartridge that didn't work. Or you got reamed. You know, like we've lost that completely.
Yeah, did.
So Zodiac also adds just very, very short sentence, a shared gaming culture and experience. Now I'm not sure if I completely agree with that because there's so many subcultures now of gaming culture. And especially like we have a little community just of this podcast, and that's a part of this bigger zeitgeist of retro gaming. But I think as like the macro level, absolutely. We've lost the perk of like shared gaming culture and experience.
I think I love that also. It's not exclusive to gaming. It's just in general that human connection is just not the same that it was. Especially if you were one of us that, you know, you grew up in the 80s and 90s. You had to meet people to enjoy the hobby of gaming. It wasn't online, you know. So there was, you will have physical magazines you will read at the store and you will see like a picture of a new game. You go to the school next day, you're talking to someone about that kind of stuff, get all excited. Right now, in part of it, it's also that there is so much instant gratification to everything. Everything's like right here, right now. There's no exciting news in gaming anymore. Remember when we had to wait for, E3's in 2 months. I can't wait for all the game reveals.
Oh, dude, I remember getting like game pros in the mail and talking to friends at school about it. You know, actually, I was wrong. I apologize. Zodiac actually said more. I just, in my editing on my page, it was down lower. There was way more he said than a shared gaming culture and experience. Actually, he pretty much, you both said the exact same thing. He also added, if you asked a group of people who played games and grew up in the 80s or 90s, what were their big games from their childhood or the era, there would be a lot of overlap. Today, everything is so splintered that 10 people could have 10 completely different experiences.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense. But yeah, we were all both on the same wavelength there. We all had Nintendo Power. And that kind of brought us all together. We were expecting the same games because we received the same issue. But then we had like GamePro and everything. So what we had access to as a consumer was much more targeted than it is now. Right now, companies, they have Twitter, they have everything. They release their own news of their games, their updates. So you're being bombarded from every direction of gaming news. And it's just, there's not this central hub like it was before.
Well, you know what ruined that was analytics and algorithms, because instead of it, you just being a part of it, feeling like it's part of your own little world, you know, back in the Nintendo Power days and your homies in elementary school and you guys like coming over and playing Double Dragon 2 and all this stuff. Now it's like so much data has been reaped from the internet, from everything that's being recorded and put online, that now it's like the marketing is going directly towards you. They're like, well, what's the age of this person? What's their background? How much money do they make? Where do they live? So we're just going to target them with these things. And that's what's happening in gaming. And it just absolutely destroys the soul of it because it's no longer, it felt, even though it was a macro thing, like millions of people had Nintendo and Super Nintendo and Genesis, and we were all sharing these experiences, but we felt like we were sharing them in our own little like nugget of a community. That's so far gone, and there's no way it's coming back, you know, and I don't know. This is, I guess it's just complaining old boomer Brian right now, but you know, I feel like that's ultimately another side of what was lost and the beauty of gaming and how really just, you know, the big wigs kill everything, man. It's really what they do.
Very, very corporate.
Yeah. Also, my answer to this, I wrote it down, and then Nogs in our community literally put the same answer. So I'm going to, you know, ride his back on this. He says couch co-op. He said, well, I never had friends, but I hear LAN parties were cool. I doubt you didn't have friends, Nox, because you have friends now and you're a cool guy, but I agree with you. There was nothing like, and that went all the way up to the 360 and PS3 era. It was still there and it was still strong. And that is such a fun, you can't really describe that. Like just having a friend come over or a group of friends come over and you're playing a game together and you're, I don't know, man. Like I have so many memories of that happening, not just from my childhood, but all the way up until I was like in my mid-20s. And that's so gone now. And I mean, they try their best to make it come back, but it's impossible.
Those LAN parties, part of what made them so special is it was an event. You had to put so much work into a LAN party. If it was on PC, everyone like, we'll take like a little corner of the house to set up their PC. You will order pizza because you guys will be there all day because there's so much setup. You're not going to be playing for like 2 hours. It's going to be like a 10-hour like game-a-thon, you know?
Even on a low-scale like GoldenEye, 4 players, all-nighter, you know, that's...
Right.
There's just something about that that was magical. and awesome. And it's not really replicated well online unless it's like you're playing with your close friends. So that is what it is. Great, great question. Thank you, Keith. And if you want to submit your own question to the Retro Question of the Week, please join us on our Discord. Link is in the show notes. It's all free. Jump in and join the party. Okay, I think it's time we discuss this week's game. And I spent the week playing it. You've already played it. You've already streamed your entire playthrough. I beat it this week. And then on top of that, I actually loaded up the Retro Hangover podcast debate about which version was better. And I listened to that. And it was a great episode. I'm not sure if that's on their main feed, but I listened to it on their Patreon. Retro Hangover is such a well-made show. Big shout out to Chris Groplean.
Yeah, I listened to that episode too. Interesting debate. Ardent.
Crazy ending too. But with all that put aside, this week's game, and I don't know if Chris put it in or if Noggs put it in, one of the two. I really should put down and keep track of who submits the games to the Wheel of Retro, but I'll try to do that moving forward. It is Disney's Aladdin on the Sega Mega Genadrive. Disney's Aladdin is a platform game based on the 1992 masterpiece film of the same name, developed by Virgin Games USA. The game was released on the Sega for the Sega Genesis. I just read that wrong. I'm going to keep going. On November 11th, 1993, as one of several games based on the film, including another game that was released in the same month by Capcom on the Super Nintendo, which is really interesting. The game is one of the best-selling Genesis games with 4 million copies sold. It also received a number of adapted ports for other platforms, such as the NES, Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Amiga, yada, yada, yada. And there is a huge, major argument on what if this is or not the definitive version. And before we go into it, I have a funny story about Aladdin in general I want to tell you. So a while back, I used to frequent a dive bar for karaoke on a Wednesday. And my buddy Sam would also frequent it at the same time. He was one of those friends that you have and you're actually close to, but you never actually hung out outside of maybe running into each other in places like, in this instance, this dive bar. And on this night, there was karaoke going on and somebody sang Arabian Nights, which, by the way, is a banger karaoke song. And I remember one thing I got to mention about my friend Sam is that he made his living at the time selling the devil's lettuce before it was legal in the state of Oregon. And being as that may, he was there very much under the influence of it, as well as I was, because we were hanging out and somebody sang Arabian Nights. And I remember looking at Sam and he was staring up at the time they had this giant projector screen that had the lyrics behind the person singing of the karaoke song. And there was a line in the song at the end of it. And Sam was just kind of squinting and he looked at me and he says, "That is a gangster ass lyric in a Disney movie." And I said, "What?" And the last part of that song says, "A fool off his guard could fall and fall hard out there on the dunes." And I remember looking at Sam being like, "Dude, that is some real shit." Anyways.
Man, that was Robin Williams singing that song too.
That was not Robin Williams singing that song.
Yeah, he's the merchant also as well as the genie, isn't he?
He didn't sing it into the Arabian Nights. That wasn't him.
No? Okay.
Well, I don't think it was. I don't know, but we'll have to find that out later. All right, anyways, let's get to first impressions. Well, it's Aladdin. Right from the Sega screen, you are greeted with charm. You know, with the humor immediately is there with the genie shooting a gun and then Iago falling. I think his name is Iago. And you know what? I found myself like dancing and singing to the first stage. This was a game that was picked for the 12 minutes of Christmas, which is an event I did last year where I let everybody choose a game and then I would spin a wheel and I'd play the game for 12 minutes and it was like a marathon. And this was one of them. And I remember just vibing, being like, wow, this is so good. Like, this is made so well. However, immediately in my first impressions, I noticed that the range of attack with a sword was kind of weak and the hitboxes were going to be a problem. But outside of that, like, I was impressed with the production value of the game. What were your feelings of your first time you played this game?
So I've had like three first impressions of this game. So I'm going to go with the first. At the time, there was no game that looked like this one in terms of sprite work. It was on a whole different level. I believe it was they actually got the Disney animators to do the sprites. So it was very animated. It looked just like it looked on the movie. And visually, it was great. On my most recent first impression, the sprite work is still there, but the backgrounds, they feel kind of drab now when I look at them again. You know, the presentation is great and all of that, but the cutscenes themselves, the quality doesn't seem as high as I seem to recall like originally. And so the sprite work itself and all that, I think it's top notch. It still holds up. The backgrounds themselves are kind of hit or miss.
The cutscenes on a 1992 Genesis game?
Hey, look at the cutscenes at Ninja Gaiden for the NES, and I'm sorry.
Hey, that's a valid point, actually. Well, then let's talk about gameplay. So I would be very surprised, anybody listening to this episode, if you haven't played Aladdin on the Genesis or the Super Nintendo at this point. But if you haven't, the gameplay is a platformer. It is a adventure game based off Disney movies. I would say during the time period that Disney was in their prime when it came to the content they were creating, especially with their animated movies, I also felt like a lot of their movie to game adaptations were really well made. It really shows in the gameplay because it follows the movie so closely in some parts, most parts. But the gameplay in this is, you know, you're traversing the storyline of the movie almost exactly in the beginning. And I noticed the first few levels seemed really easy, but I was having a problem immediately with the range of attack and the use of the sword, which I thought was weird because there was no sword in the movie, or at least I can remember. And I was getting frustrated with the enemy hitboxes because you had to get kind of close to them and then you would get hit and you didn't realize you were being hit kind of because it's like weird flashing thing. And I mean, it wasn't really bothering me too much because the music and the presentation itself was kind of wowing me. But I mean, it did kind of become annoying eventually.
That is one of the problem I have. It's funny because a lot of the problems I have in this game I have with Earthworm Jim, which was some people who worked in this game also work on that game. It's that these overly animated hand-drawn sprite type of games, the collision boxes are so hard to tell what is what, you know? Like when you played an old Nintendo game, if one of Mega Man's pixels is on a platform, he's on the platform. Here, it's just kind of hard to measure that kind of thing. With jumps, for example, it's very common in this game for you to be short on a jump because you don't know exactly where Aladdin's going to step. Dempsey's MC Hammer pants don't really help either. So the collision itself, it's kind of... it's kind of hard to measure if you kind of get used to it later, but a lot of times when I missed a jump, I felt like I should have made it. And it was just the floor and the sprite didn't really collide. It's weird.
Well, it also didn't help that a lot of the enemies were like different sizes, had different animations. And because of that, like you didn't really know where they could hurt you. And my problem with this game is immediately after playing the Super, I never played this version of it until recently. And the version I played before was a Super Nintendo. So I immediately am trying to jump on their heads and that just hurts me and does nothing but just hurting me. And so there's points and there's a lot of jumping around these levels originally where you're going to jump over or directly in front of or land in front of a lot of these enemies. And you feel like you got hit and it didn't make sense, you know? Some of the, like the snake charmer, his hitbox is tall, But then you have like the big guys and their hitbox is wide.
By the way, can we talk about this real quick? How, you know, part of the big selling point of the Genesis version is, oh, Aladdin's got a sword. You know, like everyone who's like a Genesis fanboy will tell you that. But the thing is, like, Aladdin is going around Agrabah just murdering everyone. But because it's funny, because the...
Well, you have apples. You can throw apples, too. That's a part of the attacks.
Yeah, but look, he's running around with, like, a scimitar just attacking people. The thing is, in the Super Nintendo version, there he hits people with an apple or hops on them. So they kind of go off screen and that kind of thing. And if you find the citizens of Agrabah, maybe they will pop out a window and you bounce off their head and they will kind of complain about it. But this guy is, look, there's this snake charmer in Agrabah just going about his business. And, you know, Aladdin's like, cowabunga it is, man. And just like murders him.
His business of having a cobra bite you, I guess.
Yeah,
but
yeah, no. And
I just feel like there was a present problem throughout the whole game, I think, with the enemies and their hitboxes and you trying to time it, where you realize quickly throwing apples is where it's at. You know, like, use the knife, I think, when you run out of apples. It's kind of the message I was getting.
No, the thing is, again, he's got a sword, but you realize as the game progresses, that sword is more and more useless. And then you go to the boss fights. 90% of the boss fights, it's throwing apples at them. For the most part, the sword, it doesn't even work with them.
Well, the boss fights are weird too, because they kind of felt like they were out of nowhere and they didn't make much sense to me. And and ultimately, you're just throwing apples in those situations. And I felt like they were kind of shoehorned in, even though they, like, the some of the boss, like, you know, Iago on the gear, the exercise bike, I thought that was like cool looking, but they didn't do much with that. They were like, throw the apples and don't get hit by electricity, or don't get hit by later on by like being pulled in by wind or fire or whatever.
Another thing that about this game that, well, disclaimer, inevitably, you know, because we're talking about the Genesis version, but there needs to be some comparison with the superior Super Nintendo version.
Well, I already was making comparisons.
Yeah, but so the thing is, I think the pacing in the Super Nintendo version, the momentum is much better than this one, because I felt sometimes the game was disjointed. Like, you remember Stage 3, how...
Oh,
you kill the snake charmer or like you grab that flute and go down to the first floor to grab a rope, to grab another flute, to go down to the first rope.
You know what, though? I liked that level specifically. It was one of my favorite levels because I could flow through it. It had a weird flow to it, even though, like, I figured it out. I was like, what am I doing? OK, now these ropes come out and then I jump on it. I was like getting it. And I was like, this is actually how the game should be. Is like this level where it's like a flow of jumping, a lot more platforming, not so much stopping and stopping the momentum and stabbing or throwing an apple. I feel like that level in particular was great up until the weird like double boss, you know, that didn't make any sense. You had fought this other first guy where you just hit him repeatedly as quick as you can with the sword. And then you have the guy on the ledge, you know, throwing barrels at you like Donkey Kong. And you just pretty much jump and throw apples.
Another thing is, I didn't feel that there was much fanfare to beating a stage. I don't know if you felt that the stages end very suddenly.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of it. All overall, feeling kind of rushed, the game in general.
Especially level two, you know how you're in the desert and you have to traverse the desert, getting the scarabs or whatever. That stage ends so suddenly. You hit the end of the screen and then you're on the next stage. And when you kill the bosses, it's the same thing. You kill them and then you're suddenly on the victory screen and everything. It's a little too sudden. I don't know.
But it also gives you a little bit of variety in gameplay with having like the Mario 2 style mini games in between levels, where if you collect the genie heads, you get this like kind of slot machine thing. And also if you find the Abu, you know, hidden whatever charm, and you get to play as him for this mini game that can instantly end if you get hit once.
Yo, I hate that mini game so much.
I thought that was I understand those mini games are kind of like they can end really quickly. They may have been fluff, But I did appreciate them being in the game.
It's kind of funny because when you play the Lion King game and you play the mini game, it's
oh, I am not going to play Lion King.
It's game. Very similar. They just say, take the smallest character in the movie and then like throw some crap like from above at him.
Do not put that in the Patreon pool. I do not want to play that game again. I don't like the Lion King game. But it's also very similar to this game in production and presentation. However, I think this game does a lot better job of feeling very much like its source material. And I know Lion King does too, but this game has so much going on, especially in the Genesis version, that is so... I mean, I'm kind of jumping ahead to the graphics and audio, but there's so much there that is like really delicious, you know, as a fan of this movie. That they and the problem, though, is that the gameplay didn't get the same amount of love that the graphics and audio did. And it's weird, too, because within the game... you're starting off and it kind of feels like it's changing a little too fast. And then it just jumps in difficulty.
The dungeon is the first.
The dungeon was easy, though, because that's just like platformer. You figure out to me, I was like, oh, I feel right at home in that level because I'm just.
Yeah, but it's so annoying because there's things in the foreground blocking your view. That's something that. It looks cool, but it's not practical. They got the moving blocks. If you're a Mega Man fan, you hate those.
No, I was easier with that, though. I flew through that level.
There is one block in that stage that has no collision box. You cannot hop on it.
And I wasn't even talking about that being the hard part. I was talking about the level after that.
Oh, the genie lamp?
No.
Oh, the escape.
What you can escape from, dude. It goes... real quick from Earthworm Jim to Battletoads like that. Like I was like, whoa, what a
oh no, the escape
jump in speed in this game. And like, holy crap. Good thing that you don't have to be forced to beat that level because I beat it and I was like, oh my God. Like I was doing the thing where I lean in, you know, you go from sitting back to leaning in, you know, especially in the magic carpet part with the fire coming at you. But the rolling balls level. I was like, I died a couple times leading up to that. I died like 100 times in that level where you have to go through the cave and the ball's following you. Cause I was like, I'm making so many leaps of faith that I understand I had to figure it out and keep going. But that could be a big roadblock for somebody who's not ready for that. And the continues, I do like the idea that they offer you to buy continues and lives and you can win them. But man, they do not prepare you for that ramp of difficulty whatsoever.
Yeah, the escape from the Cave of Wonders is by far, I think, the toughest level. And part of it is there was a jump I couldn't make for the life of me until I noticed it's a lighting thing. You run from the boulder and it's dark, then it's light outside, but the floor is also light. I thought I had to jump right when the dark part stopped. And I missed that jump like so many times. And the thing is, I did that on stream. And on stream, if I die, I start from the beginning again. I was so angry.
Yeah, dude, that level is no joke.
But that is, it's funny because you play these old games and then you remember they made them with rentals in mind.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, you can tell exactly where people will stop playing this game for the weekend. It's like, here it is. Like, that escape stage, that is where you're going to have to return the game at that point.
It's also crazy, too, because after those stages in particular, the game kind of goes back to being a little easier. And
I don't know, man. The lamp stage, I hated that stage
so much. I didn't
have
a problem once I figured it out. Like, it was not nearly as annoying to me than the, you know, like being in the cave and then like the fires, the escaping from the fire thing. Like, I feel like that was just such the hardest part of the game.
I don't know if they were timed or what was, but there was the path, you know, there's those genie hands you have to hop on.
Yeah.
They kind of like, they appear and disappear. For the life of me, I could not figure it out. I don't know if they were just, you just had to wait them out, but there was so many times where a hand was there and I jumped and it went away and I will die. It just like drove me up the wall.
I'm wondering if I played it on the original hardware and I'm wondering if there's something about it on this game with that. Cause it felt like I got through, I watched you stream that and I felt like I flew through it a little faster, but not because I'm better, but I feel like I was playing with like the actual controller, playing with like the actual system. There had to be, and there's parts of this game that really like, I feel reaction time and input lag will be deadly.
Yeah, maybe the RNG gods were on your side and you just, you know, everything just kind of flowed better, but I
also played it on the easiest difficulty, so.
Oh yeah, okay, I played on the default, so maybe
no, that's I was like, I played originally on normal, then I was like, nope, and when I found out that there's practice, normal, and hard, but the difference between them, I think, is just like the amount of damage you inflict on the enemies and you take. And I think the amount of continues are unlimited. So I think obviously I'm here boasting, but to be honest, I don't deserve that boast. I played it on the easiest level.
Okay. But, that, you know what? That is perfectly fine. I'm a firm believer that play in whatever way you think it's fun.
I played it normal and I got as far as I could. And then I was like, yeah, I'm not beating this game.
Even though it's against my religion to play anything on easy, that is just not how I'm built. But no shame in that.
Depends
on
the game, right? Like, yeah. Some games I like to play on hard. But this game, you know, this game is weird. Especially with these bosses are weird. The way they're designed, they're just like throw apples, unlimited apples, and then you get through them really fast.
You can't help but feel that this game, you know, it had a lot of production value, but I felt like they were running out of time. They spent so much time in the animation, the sprite work, and all that.
Well, you know what? Actually, you make a good point. Let's talk about that right now with graphics and audio. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but continue.
Yeah, but it was that so much effort went into the production value that I felt that somehow it kind of feels rushed. I don't know if you felt that in terms of the bosses and everything, you just throw a couple apples, call it a day. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain the way the game flows.
The rushness is there, especially after beating it, and you realize, wow, there's a lot of abruptness that happens in the progression, where a lot of times I didn't realize that I was at the end of the level, my first playthrough. It just happened. But I focused a lot of my energy on how beautiful the game is. It's gorgeous. I think it's better looking than the SNES version, personally. I think it's way better looking. The animations alone, it's got this, and I thought at the same time, like you did, it was reminding me a lot of Earthworm Jim and its fluidity of its animations and its quirkiness and the little background, like fan service and all the stuff that was going on. I was like, this reminds me a lot of Earthworm Jim. Then I realized it's the same team. It makes sense. Or some of the same team, not all, but some of the team that become shiny.
And the graphics are great. And the thing is also that they did an excellent job of the renditions of the music from the film.
So good.
In the game. And somehow it doesn't have that twangy Genesis sound to it, if you know what I'm talking about. It sounds very, very clean. And you know what the ironic thing is? Even though I really enjoyed the renditions of the Disney, of the songs from the film, I thought the original music in this game was amazing also. There were some bangers in there.
Yeah, they had a couple of songs and levels that weren't from the motion picture that really fit into its world and had the same amount of quality. And I played it like a total hipster with headphones plugged into my Genesis One Model One, you know, the actual high definition one that has a good sound chip. And I got made fun of that by my wife. But it was great, dude. Like hearing it, the way they did it with stereo, it was so well done. I don't think the Genesis sound chip is great at all. Obviously, I call it crunchy, but they really utilized it for this. And I don't recall the Super Nintendo version. I hate to make this a big comparison episode, but I don't recall it being as standout as it was with this game. And all outlets of the game.
The Super Nintendo version is very Capcom for the time. If you play Magical Quest starting Mickey Mouse and you play Aladdin, you can see the parallels like in everything. Graphics, sound, everything. The Disney games, the Capcom Disney games for Super Nintendo were all kind of very similar.
Yeah, and credit away from Capcom, who makes some of the best music on the Super Nintendo, or just in general. But yeah, it's this, the sound team behind this, and for apparently Tommy Tallarico was a part of it. And this guy has just been somehow made his way into all the media I've been watching and listening to this week, because I watched this whole thing about him, his involvement with how the oof noise from Roblox has been changed because of him, and then just all this slander about him. And then I was like, oh, that's crazy. And then I beat the game and I saw Tommy Tallarico. I was like, oh, what the hell? Weird. But I will say their audio and visual department for Aladdin on the Genesis, top notch.
I mean,
fantastic.
It was also Virgin, you know, so in terms of sound and music, like,
makes sense. It makes sense. Well, I guess it's that time to give our verdict on Aladdin. So let's do that. So I'll start this time. I think this is one of the best movie to game adaptations for its time, especially in the early 90s. It was one of the best selling Genesis games. And I think it's because it nailed that aesthetic dead on. The presentation also is top notch. I think a lot of the graphics in it are wonderful. I like a lot of the, like, even when the scarab like slams together in between the levels, a lot of the fan service of other movies being little Easter eggs within the levels. I just think like they did such a good job trying to really harp the spirit of the movie and make a game that's an interactive version of the movie. With that said, though, when it came to the controls, they're slightly jank, and there are serious hitbox issues throughout the game. I think the game is most fun when it's its most hardest, which was a lot of the running and platforming parts and the escape part, because it's really focused on that and it does that well, but it's also ramping up the difficulty. That should have been, I know obviously it's following the movie, but that should have been later on in the game, in my opinion. And the difficulty spikes going up and down, and the loads of trial and error, especially in like the last stages, kind of do not balance out with the amount of effort and beauty that's put in to the visuals and the audio. But if you were to ask me, what do you give Aladdin on the Genesis as far as a grade? I'm honestly going to give it a B minus, because they knocked it out of the ballpark in capturing the spirit of its source material. And even though there are some hiccups, the game was still fun and I still beat it. And I enjoyed it. So when you're going to ask me if the Super Nintendo version is better, I don't know. I'd have to play that again. It's been so long, but I will say I was impressed with the presentation of this game enough to give it a B minus overall. Van Fernal, how do you feel?
You know, I pretty much mirror almost everything you said to a T. The presentation is clearly this game's strongest point. When it came out, it was just a whole event. If you know, that one friend you had who played the Genesis, like, not the Super Nintendo, like everyone else, when this game, this was a bragging point for them, you know, when it came out. The animation, the music from the film, like the presentation, again, it's there 100%. When you break it down to the actual gameplay, I do feel that this game needed a little more time in the oven to add some polish. It doesn't quite feel right. And that is, to me, its biggest weakness. And honestly, I did enjoy the game. I beat it. And you know, it is a good, solid game, but it could have been an amazing game if it was a little more polished. So before this, I actually am also on the same boat that this game is a B minus to me. Presentation, sound, music, all of that, it's amazing. If the gameplay just matched that, this will have been one of the all-time like greatest 16-bit games of all time, in my opinion.
Virgin should have gave it more time to cook. You know, they had it. They had it from the jump. I don't know if their team was actually talented enough in the coding department to make it as good as the audios and visuals were in the form of the platforming part and all that. But
it's kind of funny, because if you take the Genesis presentation with the Super Nintendo polish, you will have gotten something just perfect.
Well, it is that time, and it's your spin. So, Van, I'm going to ask you very kindly to spin the wheel of Little Ralph. Let's go.
Okay. It's kind of funny how I see the wheel now that now Little Ralph is like
dominates it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go. So this next game we are playing is a 3D fighting game made by Capcom, who know a thing or two about fighting games.
It's not Little Ralph.
initially released on the Sega Naomi hardware and later ported to the Dreamcast.
Okay, I'm on deck.
We are playing Power Stone.
Oh, God, I love this game. Woo! It's like one of my favorite. It was the first game I bought when I bought my Dreamcast. I am so on deck for this. Let's go.
This game completely out of left field. I didn't even know that was in there, but I am very excited to play this game again because I haven't really played it since the Dreamcast launch day. So,
well, sorry, Little Ralph, you've been snubbed once again. But with all that said, I want to thank the patrons. Thank you all for contributing to the show. You help pay for, you know, the fees that it costs to host it and make it and new equipment and all that. I can't thank you enough. $2 will get you access to exclusive episodes. And also, you can add to the Patreon pool and be a part of the Super Garbage Bowl early. Also, want to thank our producer level patrons, which is Kenshiro and MK Keith himself from the Main Quest podcast.
Keith!
If you got this far in the episode, please consider leaving us a review. It helps our show grow its audience and reach like-minded weirdos like you, me, and everybody in between. And as usual, I want to give shout-outs to the shows that I listen to all the time since I'm an actual garbage man and I'm listening to podcasts 24-7 in my work, which is the Sofa King podcast. My buddy Brent Van Tassel runs that. They're amazing. You can't go wrong with that. They did a great Nintendo episode a while back that you should check out. There's also one I discovered this week, a podcast called 60 Songs That Explains the 90s, where a person goes over 60 particular and popular songs and breaks them down of why they're important, how they were made. It is so bingeable. It's so good. Check it out. And also the Retro Hangover with Carl Kaplarn. So also join the Discord. It's free. And you can vote on things like Backlog Eternal, which is the other show where I picked four games out of a random list and everybody votes and then I have to beat it. Anyways, everything I said is in the show notes. Van, how do you feel about Power Stone next week?
I am very excited. Again, this is one of those games that I completely forgot about because that Dreamcast launch was so special. It had so many, you know, 9999. That date is like engraved in my brain, you know. I pre-ordered the Dreamcast. I was there for the midnight release. You know, it was a whole event. And Power Stone was just so much fun. But I'm very eager to see if it still holds up.
You know, I hold it in high regard, but I mean, I'm visiting it now 20 years later almost. So we'll see. We will see. Well, more than 20 years, actually. Sheesh.
That's what this show is about. This about seeing just how strong our nostalgia goggles are.
That's Power Stone 1, right? Because there were two of them.
Yes.
The first one? Okay, cool.
Yeah, the second one is Power Stone 2.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Van Fernal, for being an awesome co-host. And as always, never judge a book by its grammar. And have a super garbage day. Cut to B.
Thank you for watching with my dad. I just want to say everybody, guys, bye.